The Guardian.
Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with sportingbet.com.
Football Weekly Extra, Champions League quarterfinals. Arse outclass, risk fast but avoid disaster against Barca. Meantime, strong similarities between United's clash with Bayern and Diego Maradona's face as both get made a dog's dinner of this week. We get the German view on that game at the Allianz Arena, hear from Sid in Spain and run up all the other big stories, including the Wayne Rooney ankle latest, ahead of what's potentially the biggest game of the Premier League season, Man United's clash with Chelsea this Saturday. All that, plus a listener's post and much, much more in today's Football Weekly Extra. On board today, Bazza.
Hello.
Raza.
Hello.
And Shawnee.
Hello.
Hi.
Woo.
A-team. All right. Great lineup to talk about a great, great match of football. Sean Ingle, Arsenal and Barca. that game last night. Yeah. I tell you what, Rav, let's start with you. You were there last night.
Well, the first 20 minutes were just unbelievable.
Shock and awe. I don't think
I've ever seen such a one-sided Champions League game ever, let alone an away team dominating to the extent that it did. And the only explanation for not scoring, apart from Almunia being probably in the form of his life, certainly in the first half, was that Barcelona clearly thought, we're creating all these chances, we might as well keep creating a few more. We're going to score, surely. And then they almost became bored with their own superiority by the end of it and allowed Arsenal to get back into it.
Mm. I think the only thing that was as impressive on Wednesday was probably your performance on Five Live with Nicky Campbell. Producer Pete, can you just cue that up for us?
Well, it was a mirror image of the famous Champions League final in 1999.
That's
wasn't
Nicky
it?
Campbell.
It was, with a late twist, pun intended. Obviously the results and the story's almost been overshadowed by what happened to Wayne Rooney, but from a German perspective, it does come as a bit of a deja vu, but the other way around. And of course, the parallels with 99 are just inevitable. And everyone's going very big in the German media about, you know, this is revenge, etc.
How long have you been speaking English?
Me, personally? Since school, and I moved to England in 1993.
Okay, so you spend a lot of time here. Because to be able to say in a foreign language, a twist at the end of the game, pun intended, and to be able to say déjà vu, but the other way around in a foreign language, is just fantastic. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Imagine being able to speak.
I know.
Like
I saw you jotting down everything he was saying in amazement.
He speaks English better than what we do.
That's true.
It is true, Rafa. God bless. I did jot down one or two things myself. Déjà vu the other way round.
I'd like an explanation for that. We were trying to figure this out in the office yesterday, and it just makes no sense at all.
Yes, it does. Also, and I know this is going to be me being thick, what do you mean a twist at the end, pun intended? What was the pun there?
That Rooney twisted his ankle. And
Right, that is clever then.
Write it down.
Right.
Jimbo.
All right.
But Nicky Campbell took grave exception yesterday on Twitter. To
you come over here speaking our language.
Us saying that he had been patronising Raf and he was genuinely in awe. But then Nicky Campbell speaks quite good English for a foreigner as well. He used to be Scottish until he decided he was Irish instead. But he is foreign.
Well, there you go. Anyway, magnificent stuff, Raphael.
Thank you very much.
And back to that terrific game of football. A lot of people saying Barcelona unlucky not to go away with the win. But Mowgli84 asking the question, when does missing chances go from being unlucky to being poor finishing? Because their finishing was poor.
Yeah, it was poor, but Almunia made some splendid saves and Ibra was... Ibra, until just into the second half, he was sort of playing to type, as he has in England on 10 or 11 occasions in the past. But, you know, even at half time, you just sort of knew Barca, it was only a matter of time before they were going to score. And when they did eventually score, it kind of put paid to the sneery myth propagated by respected pundit Tim Lovejoy last year that Barca only have one way of playing, because there were long balls over the top that did for Arsenal.
But I think we should almost go back to the start here and just say this was an incredible game of football. And as a kid, I grew up watching Brazil in 82, Falcao, Zico, Eder, you know, and that made me fall in love with football. And I think there'll be, you know, kids in every school in England should be given that DVD and being told to watch it. You know, football shouldn't be about hoofing up into the stratosphere. It shouldn't be about, you know, beating the opposition black and blue. It should be about last night. And some of Barcelona's stats, you know, they're 23 shots to 6 to Arsenal. They
That was in which period of the game?
No, in the overall.
Overall.
They had 12 shots in the first 15 minutes. Right. The average possession for Arsenal in the Champions League is 60%. Last night it was only 35%. Mm. Because, you know, Barcelona just basically out-Arsenaled Arsenal. And it should have been death by 1,000 passes. But it was only, you know, that last half an hour where Barcelona just lost their way a bit. You know, but for that, they could have won, you know, 4-5.
So it was Barcelona losing their way rather than Arsenal finding their way.
Well, I think, you know, I think obviously when Walcott came on, he made a difference. He really got at Maxwell. And I think, you know, Arsenal, you have to give them a little bit of credit, because last year against Manchester United in the semi-finals at the Emirates, they capitulated when they went a couple of goals down. This time, you know, they fought back.
I think you have to give them a huge amount of credit for the character they showed and for dragging themselves back into a game that they could conceivably have lost 6-7, 8-0. The manner in which they pulled themselves back into the game was quite ironic, really, because they kicked and fouled their way back into it in a manner which, if other teams do it to them, Arsene Wenger bleats and whinges about it no end. The foul, Arshavin's foul on Busquets was a disgrace.
But that was early on. They didn't kick and foul their way back into the game. Their way back into the game came not necessarily completely through their own footballing ability, but a lot of it was football ability, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was run. Football ability as well, but there was a lot of fouling going on as well, spoiling tactics. And as I said, the foul by Arshavin, if a Stoke player or a Wigan player did that to one of Arsenal's players, Wenger would go mad.
But he's not that type of player.
No.
As you know. But I think that the two things. One, I think Guardiola will really regret taking off Ibrahimovic that early, because they didn't have that outlet. They didn't have that ball over the top when they kept losing the ball in the second half. That would have made a big difference. And the other thing is that a lot of the Spanish media have been saying, you know, Barcelona, the fact that they capitulated or nearly fell apart in the later stage of the game was not a coincidence, because they've played so many games this season. They haven't been able to rotate. It's actually quite a small squad, and they're very, very knackered. And it really showed in the second half when Walcott looked like the best player in the world, because a bit like in the first half with Dani Alves galloping up the same side of the pitch, there was actually no one there. There was no one there. He had about 30 metres of green space in front of him, and with his pace, he's always going to exploit that.
Well, presumably, Guardiola will only regret the substitution of Ibrahimovic if things go wrong in the second leg. And it's probably worth remembering what's happened home and away for Barcelona of late. I mean, Bayern Munich, who held Barcelona quite close last season, they got absolutely taken apart back at the Nou Camp. Stuttgart this year, similar story. Do you give Arsenal? Do we collectively reckon that Arsenal still have a chance?
I think it's very, very difficult, because Arsenal are going to be without Gallas. They're going to be without Arshavin, probably going to be out. Cech Fabregas, Van Persie's not back yet. Ramsey's obviously out. They are going to go there with a very weakened team, and I think it was one miracle pulling it back from 2-0 down. It'll be an even bigger one, I think, to go and win in the Nou Camp.
I would expect Barcelona to win, but at least Arsenal have given themselves a chance to win, which is more than anyone would have given them after 20 minutes.
And I guess no Puyol, no PK as well. But it was bizarre last night, because all of Wenger's gambles he made didn't come off. You know, Gallas aggravated that problem, Fabregas is injured. But he was like a poker player that kept bluffing and kept getting called. But in the end, he went all in with his last remaining chips and managed to sort of save himself.
All right, what about Cesc Fabregas then, who will know, I guess today will it be, or tomorrow? He's talking about possible fracture of an ankle bone.
Extraordinary shin.
Yeah. And a very brave performance to stay on the field. What's that going to mean?
Do you think that was brave or was it stupid?
Well,
I think he should have been taken. I don't think he should have played it at all, to be honest, because he clearly wasn't fit. And once he injured himself after taking the penalty, Barca were down to 10 men. There's only 6 minutes left. Take him off. Because who's to say he didn't aggravate that injury I'm almost certain he probably did aggravate it in those last 5 minutes. And that could have ruled him out for the rest of the season and potentially the World Cup, although that's not
Well, that's
Wenger's
the suggestion
concern.
That he was making on Thursday morning. In the short term, the return and Arsenal's title chances, what impact does this have?
Well, they're playing Wolves on Saturday, and you'd still expect them to squeeze through that game. But obviously, you know, they've got Man City coming up, they've got Spurs coming up, you know, a full-strength Arsenal side, you'd expect them perhaps to win both those games. But you know, if you're feeling a weakened team, then Arsenal are obviously going to struggle without their four or five of their best players.
Certainly, yeah. Real risk that we might not have any English clubs in the semi-finals for the first time in 7 years. It's like Schadenfreude in reverse, I call it. It's all the fault of Ofcom, of course, and their decision to limit the poor old Premier League's massive funding in 4 years' time or something like that. Fascinating topic, which sadly we won't be able to get into in today's Football Weekly Extra, but over in Media Talk, they are debating that very, very issue. Mm. Lucky them, eh?
I can see them through the glass. It looks really heated. Yeah.
Woof.
There's people throwing pens around it. Banging desks and all sorts.
My kind of podcast. Okay, right. As I say, possibility of no English clubs in the semi-finals because of Bayern's stirring comeback against that Man United team Tuesday night. What's the German view on this? Is it job done, do you think, or are they very, very worried about what's going to happen at Old Trafford?
It's neither. It's not certainly not job done because 2-1 is not a great result in European standards. And of
how about 2-1 and Rooney out?
Well, that gives him a bit of confidence. The fact that they did come back at all gave him a huge boost. And of course, if you approach the game being quite wary of Rooney and then he scores after 12 minutes of the ball being in play, it could have been all over and perhaps should have been all over because Rooney had a fantastic chance to make it 2-0. He was, I think, trying to be a bit too clever with it. He could have easily just side-footed it, but he dragged it back and tried to look pretty. And not only the game, but the tie would have been over at that stage, I believe, because unlike Arsenal against Barcelona, I don't think Bayern would have had it in them to come back from 2-0 down. But as it is, they now have a genuine chance. And of course, the chance is only enhanced by the fact that Schweinsteiger and Robben, arguably the best two players this season, will be back. And of course, it's the perfect scenario for counter-attacking football for Neuer and Robben, who will have some space and have the opportunity to go at Patrice Evra, who really looks a little bit knackered.
Mm. Robben, do you think he'll definitely be back?
Yes.
Yeah,
definitely.
Well, he's going to play on Saturday, I believe.
Yeah.
So he might not be back because he could get injured again.
That is true.
Saturday.
I still think that he won't play on Saturday, at least not 90 minutes.
It's
a big game.
How big, Raphael?
It's as big as Chelsea Man United because it's also one against two, and Bayern have to really beat Schalke in Gelsenkirchen to get that first spot back. So it's big, but I think Robben will be rested. I can't see him starting from the beginning.
All right. In the second leg, do you think Gary Neville will be playing right back again, or do you think that Lord Ferg will...
Well, it depends. I watched the game and I thought he got turned inside out and several times over by Frank Ribery. But then the next day I read Henry Winter's report and he said that United were imperious. And then Oliver Holt in the Mirror said Ribery jinked and weaved and probed, but Neville barely gave him a sniff. And you're just going, what game were you watching?
Would you want a sniff from Gary Neville, do you think?
I've met Gary Neville. He's a nice enough chap. The trouble is when you do match reports, as everyone here will know, that you know, you're filing a runner, so you'll be filing half your copy on 45 minutes, then another big chunk on 70 minutes. So most of that match report will have been written before Bayern scored their two late goals.
Mm.
And, you know, the first half an hour, you know, Neville did quite well. I'm sure that copy would have been written.
Do you think he wouldn't go back and revise any of
well,
that?
Well, he perhaps would have done, but, you know, then you're often...
No, I do appreciate the vagaries of writing a runner, but I couldn't see any point in that match where Neville was being anything other than utterly outclassed. I mean, I don't want to pick on Oliver Holt or Henry Winter, and it's just two examples I've seen. But there seemed to be a general mood among a lot of English commentators and pundits and journalists that, you know, a huge surprise that this team from Bavaria were actually able to play a bit of football. Mm. And sort of indicative of a failure in this country of people to learn from history.
I think one thing we should point out, one person that was very magnanimous afterwards was Sir Alex Ferguson, who actually said, you know, we were beaten by the better side, you know, Bayern played very well, particularly in the second half, and you know, he gets a lot of criticism, some of it justified in this country, but I thought Ferguson was very generous after that defeat.
Right, and in a similar fashion to your praise for Almunia, Eben van der Sar had a cracking game, I thought,
yeah, well,
for United.
He kept them in it early doors. I fully expected Ferguson to go off on one afterwards about the second goal and find some reason why it should have been disallowed, but he didn't. But I think maybe the reason he was so magnanimous is because, like in the Champions League final last year, it was largely his fault that Manchester United lost.
And his fault being because what?
I think his team selection was poor. His substitutes were a bit weird. I couldn't figure out what he was doing.
I completely agree, certainly with the substitutes. And he was not only generous afterwards, but also generous in the second half by opening up the whole of midfield to Bayern, taking off Carrick, bringing on Berbatov, taking off Carrick and Ji-sung, bringing on Berbatov and Valencia. Really two substitutions that didn't make any sense, unless he was thinking that they're going to get that second goal and kill the tie. Of course, they didn't get the ball at all. And after sort of a fairly cagey 20 minutes in the second half, it's only then that Bayern actually started playing again because they had all the space. One thing I wanted to say about Gary Neville, and it was equally right about Evra to a certain extent, is the odd thing was that even with this formation, a 4-3-3 ostensibly, United failed to do what every side, even the poorest, least attractive side in the Bundesliga do, which is double up on the flanks, because they know, everyone knows, that Bayern don't really have much in the middle in terms of going forward. So what they do is they double up on Ribery, double up on Robin or whoever plays on the other side. In this case, Lahm had unbelievable space. The ball was always on and Gary Neville was isolated. And, you know, you have to feel for him because most people will look bad 1v1 against Frank Ribery.
I want curly hair too. So has anyone else noticed that Frank Ribery looks more like Gary Neville than Phil Neville does? It's true. There's a great similarity. Yeah.
They've got the ball, though.
Hey, yeah, that's an important distinction to make. Rooney. Oh, sorry, Barry, you first.
Well, yeah, Rooney, I think Manchester United fans need not be too disheartened that he's going to be missing, because I've ferreted out some stats about how they've got on in his absence. They've beaten Bolton twice, Wolves, CSKA Moscow and Wolfsburg. They've won 11 and lost 3 without Rooney this season. And United have also lost 9 games this season in all competitions and bounced back with emphatic wins in all but one of those cases.
All right.
After they lost against Leeds in the FA Cup, they could only draw away at Birmingham, but they've scored an average of 3 goals in every other game coming after one that they've lost.
Excellent. Well, that's it for part one. Sid coming up next with the reaction to Arsenal, Barcelona and more.
Football Weekly from The Guardian in association with SportingBet.com.
Now, joining us on the line and back in long trousers, one can only hope, is Sid Lowe. Sid, are you there?
Hello, James.
Hi, how are you?
I'm all right, thank you.
Excellent news. Tell us, Sid, about the Spanish reaction, the Catalan reaction, if you prefer, to... I see I can't pronounce it now.
Go on.
Arsenal.
It's like Bradgelina, isn't it?
It is.
To Arsenal.
Arsenal. You know what I'm talking about. The big game at the Emirates.
Oh, is that what they're calling it? Arsenal these days?
That's what Jimbo was calling it.
That's rubbish, isn't it? Anyway. Right, yeah, okay. Well, shall I give you some Spanish reaction? The best bit about it is, let's give you the Spanish reaction first, or the Madrid reaction. The Madrid reaction is a picture of Real Madrid going for dinner on the front cover of Marca, and a picture of Ribery on the front cover of AS. Last night's, what did you call it, Arsenal?
Yep.
Didn't even happen. In Catalonia, as you can imagine, they're really talking about this as being a wonderful opportunity lost, but still a brilliant performance. And when they look at it coldly, the 2-2 is a very good result. But there's a little bit of frustration at the fact that let's face it, it should have been 5 or 6-0 and it should have been put to bed way before Arsenal even got the chance to get into the game. There was a real hope last night when they were 2-0 up, there was a real hope that they would put it out of sight, partly so that they could take the second leg easily, because bear in mind that the second leg is only 4 days before the Clásico, which probably will go a long way to resolving the Spanish league title, because although there'll be a lot of games after, I think there's still 8 weeks left after that. Madrid and Barcelona just don't show any signs of slipping up right now.
All right. And what about for the second leg, Sid? No Piqué, no Puyol either. What are their replacements like?
Well, the reminder that Guardiola made last night, and I think it's a very important one, is let's not forget they went into the Champions League final against Manchester United last year with 3 of their first choice back 4 out. They played with Yaya Toure at centre-back. They played Silvinho, who'd hardly played all season. And they still held Cristiano Ronaldo and Wayne Rooney and so on at bay. Who, by the way, was called Kevin Rooney. by Spanish TV on Tuesday night for the Bayern Munich game when he scored a goal from Kevin Rooney. I actually looked it up. It turns out Kevin Rooney's a boxer. But anyway, so there is a feeling that Barcelona have players to recover. Almost certainly the two centre-backs will be Rafa Márquez and Gabi Milito. And Gabi Milito's playing very well, finally back after injury. But Rafa Márquez, and get your bingo cards at the ready, is absolutely rubbish.
Mm. Art Deco asks, apparently Guardiola played Kasabian in Barca's dressing room at half-time. Could you comment on this?
No, I couldn't comment on it.
It would certainly explain their slump in the second half.
Bear in mind that Guardiola last year made a big thing about playing Coldplay on the team bus on the way to all the games. And Barca, what's the name of the track? I forgot what it's called. Living La Vida, or something like that. I can't remember what it's called. Some Coldplay track that became almost the anthem of Barcelona last year. It was played before every single match of the Camp Nou and kind of became their song, as it were.
Sorry, Sean Inger was doing a... go on, Sean.
No, I was saying...
Give us the track, Sean.
No, I'm not going to give you the track.
Why not?
Because I can't sing.
It's that La Vida one, for some reason, I can't explain. Is it that one?
That one, Saint
Pete. It's something like that, yeah. I'm afraid I can't believe that
on this podcast.
As opposed to Ricky Martin's Living La Vida Loca.
Sid has been see Ricky Martin, haven't you, Sid?
Was Ricky Martin Living La Vida Liar?
Hey, I tell you what.
Were you as surprised as the rest of us to hear that news about Ricky, Sid?
I was absolutely shocked, yes. Mm. I had no idea.
First George Michael, now this. Who knew?
Fundament 666 would like to put it to you, Sid, that Barcelona are crap if they get their captain sent off and they throw away a 2-0 lead at the Emirates, when Chelsea and Manchester United have both done fantastic damage against Arsenal at the Emirates in both the Premier League and the Champions League respectively. For all Barcelona's tippy-tappy possession, says Fundament 666, they can only muster a 2-2 draw.
That could well be a point, but how about I return by saying... For all of Manchester United's brilliant Cristiano Ronaldo and Wayne Rooney, last year they were absolutely destroyed by Barcelona in the Champions League final. And for all that they complain about penalties, Chelsea were ultimately knocked out.
Indeed. Sid, next up for the mighty Barcelona, or otherwise, Athletic Bilbao. KM Pushkas says, give Bilbao some love. Another great game tonight. I think this was posted a game a day or two ago. And some great goals. They're playing the mighty Barca on Saturday, but they're only 2 points outside a Champions League spot. That's amazing.
Absolutely extraordinary.
Because they were, you know, on the verge of relegation last season, weren't they?
Not last season, the season before. They've been close to relegation for the last couple of seasons.
Yeah.
They are a side that I think they've taken advantage of a couple of key things. One is the collapse of two potentially very strong Champions League contenders, who are Atletico Madrid and Villarreal. The other is the drop in form recently of Sevilla, who are now the fifth, and Atletico just behind them. So a Champions League place is a genuine possibility for them, which would be a fantastic achievement. And they're a good side to watch in so much as they're entertaining, because they're very direct and on occasions they can be very, very dirty. They've also got three or four really, really good players who are well worth watching, and in particular Fernando Llorente. And the game that's mentioned there is a 4-3 on Monday night against Racing Santander. They were actually the two best goals were scored by Racing.
Yeah, interesting. Sid, that's fantastic. Great to have you back. And we'll speak to you on Monday,
Okay, brilliant.
Fabulous midweek of Champions League. You know, European football's been vintage in the last couple of weeks. And Lyon-Bordeaux was another cracking match. 3-1, of course, for the Lyonnais. And big advantage they take into the second leg with the Girondins of Bordeaux, team that took away their title. It's about as much as I know about this subject. But somebody posting, I mentioned Choppy's name, asking if we could get a little Ligue 1 action in the pod. They have a whopping 6-way title race going on in France, including Montpellier, who've never won League One, and were just given the League Two runner-up promotion in 2009. Anyway,
Barry might be the man for this.
You had to go and bring that up, didn't you? There were, 650 posts this week? And most of them were you, battling off all comers on the subject of French. Let's not start that again, Barry. Let's consider that one over. And the long debate
I resisted the urge to dredge up Rafa's prediction that Manchester United would beat Barca 3-0 in last year's Champions League.
But you just have.
Well, of course I have, because he's brought up my thing about the French.
I think the important thing to say is that, you know, you don't want a show where we all sit on the fence and say absolutely nothing. You know, we're going to make calls. Some of them are going to be right, some of them are going
to
be wrong.
And we're going to own up to them afterwards.
Of course we are.
Excellent. Right, okay. Now, also in the Champions League, a good game. The result wasn't as spectacular, 1-0 to Inter, but the second half was all... Sean, you saw this game as well, didn't you?
I did, and the first half I thought was quite dull, but the second half Inter played quite well. Could have won by 1-0.
Wow, definitely. It was all shots and corners, all down the Cesca end. and you know, Inter's finishing, leaving a lot to be desired, but they're creating a whole bundle of chances. As you say, the first half very flat, and coming into the game, the memories of the Chelsea performance, or rather the Inter performance at Stamford Bridge, you expected Inter to really go about this fixture, and instead it seemed to bring back memories of all the games that they just petered out in Europe. And I wondered if that was anything to do with Mourinho's performance the night before, when he'd requested at a Champions League press conference to speak to a Sky TV crew and then told them in as many words, "I don't like Italy, please come and get me somewhere." Now, I know that Mourinho likes to play games, etc., and he usually says things which are going to in somehow, some way take the pressure off his players ahead of a big game. But I don't get this one. I know that when he talks about conspiracies, which is often quite irresponsible given the recent history in Italy, to, you know, raise the spectre of people, you know, having a plan against Inter, especially when you consider the fact that they are not hard done by referees at all. But you can see how that does, you know, create the siege mentality that he's looking for. But to say ahead of a really, really important European fixture, the first time they've been in a quarterfinals for, since what, 2003-4?
Against Valencia, I think.
To come out with this thing saying, basically, I don't want to be here anymore, and I'm actually trying to send a message in every way I can for somebody to come and rescue me. What does that say to the players about the, you know, the project, his belief in them, his commitment to their project?
Well, I found it very interesting. Well, the reaction in Italy has been, as you'd expect, quite negative. I know Maurizio Zamparini, the president of Palermo, said, you know, "What special one are you talking about? You know, with the players in to have, I can win the title." And Massiman Pavan on TuttoMercatoWeb.com is one of the bloggers who says Mourinho no longer loves Italy, you know, that bad country that mistreats him and only allows him to make 11 million euros a year.
Mm. How long have you been speaking Italian, Sean? That's really impressive to say to the Mercato Web like that.
I did do a course a while ago.
All right, excellent. Very good. Private Dick posting in saying, on that Mourinho interview that Sky plays on an endless loop in which he says, "I don't like Italian football, they don't like me. I'd be interested to hear more about why Italians don't take to Mourinho. You'd have thought it would be the British with their famous reserve who would react against his brashness and not the supposedly passionate and open Italians."
The British don't like him either, apart from Richard Keyes and Andy Gray, who want to have his babies.
I don't know. I think a lot of people find him fascinating.
I know, he's good entertainment, but, you know,
I think
he's no big loss to the game. I think people get fed up with him. I couldn't care less if he comes back, never comes back. He's good value for money. He gives good quote, but his teams are awful to watch. And
I think
blight on the game.
Really, I think a lot of people still think he's a great manager. I think he's done a great job now this season at Inter, helped by picking up Wesley Snyder, that stroke of good fortune.
I'm not saying he isn't a good manager.
Right.
I'm just saying he's...
Well, you see, I think that is one difference between here and in Italy. I don't think people in Italy are as impressed with him as a manager either. I think that, A, they are... As I think Paolo was saying the other day, that they do expect a little bit more politeness and respect from their managers, and the fact that Mourinho, one of the first things he did was criticise Ranieri in quite personal terms. But I think also, I think with the English as well, that like many people who've arrived at success late and on the back of a large amount of money, they tend to be taken in by the right kind of accent, and in this case foreign, and Mourinho plays the foreign accent, and so they kind of bite on that. I mean, Sven Göran Eriksson was taken very, very seriously for a long time in this country as well. So,
but he's a very much a pantomime villain, and that's the kind of thing that Sky love.
It is odd because A, you think he's in the hat anyway when it comes to any jobs opening up. So why does he have to send any kind of message? What does he think, or what do people think when they think it is a come and get me message, that all of a sudden people are just saying, Mourinho, he wouldn't be a bad manager. So it doesn't make sense on any level. It's
so
really,
why do you
really
think
odd.
He did it?
I think the only thing that would make any sense to me would be that he wanted to just again reinforce how Inter are fighting against everybody, and they're not wanted. He is not wanted by Italy. He has to do, and they have to do it all by themselves against the whole of Europe, reinforcing that old us against them mentality that he so often employs. That is the only explanation I can find.
This kind of reminds me of the Chris Rock routine where he's gone on about why did the guys who did the Columbine massacre do it. You know, people are trying to, was it because they were listening to the wrong kind of music or video games? And he goes, no, whatever happened to crazy? You know, they did it because they were nuts. And I think Marino's a bit nuts. He's just an attention seeker.
Mm.
Well, there doesn't have to be a particular reason why.
What a week, eh? Ricky Martin gay and Jose Mourinho an attention seeker. Yeah. Two bombshells. Anyway, Lynx says, thanks to the pod for mentioning the Portuguese Superliga, a much overlooked European league, etc., etc., etc. I think we might have a Portuguese correspondent lined up ahead of the second leg of the Benfica-Liverpool clash, which is coming up, of course, this evening. Gandhi says, questions for the podstronauts. Thoughts on the Celtic job? Mark Hughes front-runner with Triggs close behind?
There's no way I think Mark Hughes will go to Celtic. I think he's looking for a Premier League job, and I think he'll probably get one
West Ham,
come the summer. Possibly. I think West Ham stay up.
Right.
That's one, although I think he'd prefer to stay north.
On the subject of Millwall, meanwhile, Cable 1973, good to see that someone at The Guardian actually noticed Millwall's storming form and Leeds' seeming implosion, because they are what? They're just one goal of goal difference outside automatic promotion.
It would be one of the great, great chokes. Before they played each other last week, Millwall were 3-1 to win at Elland Road, and yet Leeds, since Christmas, I think their form line suggests they'd be 15th in the league if they kept playing, while Millwall would be second. The way Leeds are going, you know, it looks like it's going to be playoffs again.
But Millwall with the promotion up to the Championship?
Quite possibly.
And after what that nasty Leeds fan wrote about John Ashton,
yeah.
I hope they don't get promoted.
LUFC fan, that was extraordinary. Yeah. I think we were all a bit taken aback. Sorry,
Lee Harvey Oswald, you compared it to the lone gunman.
Well, then you mentioned seal clubbing, I think, which might be closer to the mark.
It's like a killing Bambi, you know, you just don't do it.
You just don't
John's
do
a
it.
Guy.
Right, that's it for part two then. Coming up after the little musical bit, we'll start on the weekend's action. Now, it's been a cracking midweek of action. Prospect of more fine football in the next few days in the Premier League and in other places. But how about that Man United-Chelsea clash? Man United with a terrific home record, but Chelsea coming into this game on fire, not literally. Of course, there'll be health and safety issues over that. But very much form team, scoring goals for fun. It's a new expression I've just invented. What do you think? What's going to happen, Barry Glendinning?
Right, you were asking who are going to happen. My predictions recently haven't been the best, but I think Manchester United are going to win this quite comfortably.
No Rooney? You think, no?
Yeah, I don't think the loss of Rooney is going to be as big a problem for them as people are suggesting. Chelsea have not been particularly good on the road this season. They've dropped points against some very mediocre teams, Hull, West Ham, Blackburn, Wigan, just to name a few. They've only won two away out of their last five in the league. And, I just think... The only thing I would say, they've had the benefit of a week's rest, whereas Manchester United have had a very tough game midweek, which may hurt their chances.
But it's a big point. Ancelotti, I just imagine him sitting there with a big bowl of pasta, perhaps, on Tuesday night and thinking, no Wayne Rooney, that's good news. And B, maybe I should ask Malouda to do a ribbery on whoever it is turns up as right back, Raphael.
Well, a definite possibility. It's also Anelka against Evra. Oh. It's going to be another key game. And even, I think, one or two questions, certainly from United fans that I spoke to, about Rio's fitness still. He did all right, I thought, against Bayern, but I think there is a sense that he's perhaps still not quite 100%, and he'll come up against, well, along with his fellow defender, Nemanja Vidic, he'll come up against Drogba, who's also been rested. So I think you can never make Chelsea favourites away to United, but I think they've got as good a chance as they've had in years winning this game.
I think 2 points worth making. First of all, Chelsea pre-Abramovich used to be United's bogey team at Old Trafford. They'd go there and they wouldn't quite regularly with the likes of Frank Sinclair and Eddie Newton in the side. But over the last 4 years, they've only scored one goal. Old Trafford's, bizarrely. The other thing I think is quite interesting is Ancelotti was brought to Chelsea to score goals. They've now scored 82 goals this season. If they could continue to keep scoring the way they're doing, and they can average three a game for the last six games, they'll have scored 100 goals in the league, which I think no team in England in the top flight has done, I think, since it's just after the war. So that's an achievement, I think, that hasn't really been widely publicised and perhaps deserves to be. As for who will win, I think it's a toss of a coin. I think the odds between them both, you can get around 9-5 in both teams, which suggests it is going to be a close game.
Is the winner of the game on Saturday, is that the next champions?
No, of course not, because United still have to play. I think they'll play Man City the game after. But you know, if Chelsea go ahead and win, you know, they know that they it's in their hands.
Yeah. All right, then. Well, that's Saturday. Also coming up on the weekend, of course, all sorts of exciting developments in store in the race for fourth place. Man City are at Burnley, where Brian Laws is working such wonders. Of course, this would be what a reasonably easy.
You think so? I looked at the odds the other day, and City were 4-5 on. It's just they have a 5 out of 9 chance of winning. I think their chances of winning are much, much higher than that. And you know, if they're going to finish fourth, you know, Burnley, a Burnley side that have only won once under Brian Laws, is, you know, a side they should be beating.
Mm, they drew 3-3 at Eastlands earlier in the season, but of course that was before, you know, Brian Laws. Spurs will be at Sunderland, Barry. Spurs, of course, the occupants of the hotly contested fourth spot at the moment, but with a tough run in.
If Sunderland do nothing else this season, and I very much doubt they will, I would absolutely love if they beat Spurs and Darren Bent got 2 or 3 goals.
Right. Okay. He's certainly on form at the moment, isn't he, to do that?
He is. He didn't do much against Liverpool last Sunday, but he didn't really get a touch of the ball. So I think he got booked. That was his only contribution.
Right. Well, Liverpool themselves will play on the Sunday, and they're away at Birmingham, which is a tough fixture. Of course, Liverpool have Benfica away Thursday evening. They won't be able to call on the services of Alberto Aquilani, which is really going to disrupt Rafa Benitez's
another shocker
plans. Isn't it? Yeah. And yeah, you know, it's a tough place to go, isn't it? You know, plenty of big teams have been to St Andrews and
as
failed to win.
Arsenal found last week, but
Chelsea and United before. Yeah,
Liverpool are not in a good position because they're actually the only side chasing for that fourth spot who are still involved in Europe. And I think, as you can see from the lineups in the last few games, Benitez does take Europe seriously, and they don't have the biggest squad in the world. They are over reliant on one or two players, and I think going further in the Europa League might come back to haunt them.
Mm.
Well, Liverpool have lost 8 times away in the league this season, which is, you know, astonishing. It's that Birmingham have only lost twice at home. I can see that being a really tight game, but you know, Liverpool have certainly found form in the last couple of weeks. So we'll see.
Well, they remain 4 points off fourth spot, having played a game more than Spurs and Man City, of course, between those two teams in fifth place. Meanwhile, down at the bottom, we're going to get any further light on the big, the big scenario down there, which three teams are going down. Portsmouth, who have shed more players from last weekend. Ryderson out for a long time.
Ryderson's out. Weber's out for 6 months. Tal Benim looks like he's going to be missed the rest of the season.
Well, they look like they're gone, and you'd think Burnley probably are too. Which means that Hull and West Ham are the two, as things stand, that look to be fighting it out over the final spot. Now, Hull are away at Stoke, which is going to be a very tough fixture for them. Yeah, they've got a terrible away record, he said, filling air.
I'd confidently put the farm on Hull finishing ahead of West Ham in the table.
Really? Really?
West Ham are so bad.
And then will West Ham sue Fulham for not fielding a proper team?
Well, they might well do.
What has David Sullivan said on that?
He said I got the impression that if West Ham go down, they will sue Fulham for 50 million quid in lost earnings.
Right.
Because apparently Fulham have already sued West Ham for 50,000 for a similar incident last season, which cost Fulham a place in the league. And
successfully sued them, did they?
Well, I don't know, it may be ongoing, but it just sounds like they're playing silly buggers.
Mm. Well, many, many thanks to you all. It's been a great week. I know that I'm looking forward to the weekend and to next Monday's pod, which will be on Monday. There will be a paper review of the midweek Champions League games available if you're bored over the Easter weekend. Check it out. What the foreign press are saying about those games.
I think you're underselling that. It's basically, if those of you who watched Gazzetta Football Italia back in the 90s, James did a brilliant paper review where you look at the Italian papers and the pun. And
many of the same jokes can be seen in this.
Well, absolutely, but it's a video roundup.
And the same slice of cake.
But it's a video roundup that you'll be able to see on the site from 4 o'clock Thursday afternoon.
No, you won't.
Okay, 6 o'clock.
That's right. Many thanks, Sean, for that and for your participation today. Barry?
Happy Easter.
Thanks for you. Thank you. Happy Easter to you too. And to you too.
Easter egg shaped head.
Buona Pasqua.
Yeah.
Do they do Easter in Germany? It was a big celebration.
Yes. Yeah.
I have this image of people handing each other rocks or eggs made of wood. Yeah, and painted grey.
Right.
I don't know why.
I don't know, Barry. There are people who might be able to help you with that image, but I'm not one of them. Producer Pete, many thanks for all of that. And we'll be back on Monday. Speak to you then.
Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with sportingbet.com.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.